Hi, and welcome to the Dying to Ask podcast. So a little earlier this year, I was listening to the Armchair Expert podcast, which is hosted by the actor Dax Shepard. And Dax had, I call him Dax, he had a guest on there, this woman Jessica Leahy, who is the author of a book called The Gift of Failure, and it's about kids. Great book. But the best thing I got out of the podcast was the fact that I found out she hosted her own podcast called Hashtag Am Writing. And Am Writing is a podcast that Jessica hosts with two other female writers where they talk about the writing process, the writing business, their own hacks and knacks when they're going through writing. They've had great success. They have interesting guests. But what I really love is the camaraderie of the three female writers. They're smart, they're funny, they're very respectful of each other. And it's just a really super motivating podcast, whether you are a writer, you want to be a writer, or you just like writing. And I'm kind of like a little bit of all of those things. So anyway, so I started listening to the Am Writing podcast. And then later this summer, I get a direct message from a woman named KJ Del Antonio. This is going somewhere. Hang with me here. And she tells me that she has just she's about to debut this new book called The Chicken Sisters, fiction book. And her regular marketing tour, et cetera, has been, you know, COVID canceled like everything else. And she was sitting there with a box of these books, which are kind of like the I don't even know what you call them, like the pre-readers. They're the books that they send out for publicity, like to get some buzz going about books. So she says, hey, I've got all these books. Would you like one? And I write her back instantly. I say, absolutely, I would love it. Well, then I sat back. I'm like, why do I know this name? And then I realize she is one of the people from this podcast that I have been binging during COVID. And then I realized that I actually had been a fan of hers in her other genre of writing, which is parenting. She was also the editor of the Motherload blog on the New York Times. She's a parenting expert, and she wrote a book called How to Be a Happier Parent, which in retrospect, I should have been reading every single day during quarantine. Anyway, really interesting woman, and here she reaches out to me with this book called The Chicken Sisters, which I loved. It is so funny, so well written, and was such a great escape from the reality that is life in 2020. So I reached out to KJ because what I'm really curious about is how creative people these days, whether they're writers or painters or anything, how they're staying creative when a lot of the life right now just feels the same. How do you spark your own creativity when you don't feel super motivated? Does that make sense? I think it's hard these days to get yourself motivated to be creative, to expand your imagination when you can't even necessarily leave the four walls of your home. So today on the Dying to Ask podcast, we catch up with KJ Del Antonio. We find out how she is debuting a brand new book in the middle of a pandemic. The book's release has been delayed a few times. It will be coming out in December. We talk about the process of what writers are going through right now. And she gives us one very simple tip that she uses daily to make sure she gets herself into the chair and starts writing. And it is so simple. You will say, why on earth did I not think of it? And I'll tell you what, I am going to try it probably like 10 minutes after this podcast ends. It is so good. And then because she is a parenting expert with a great journalism background, I had to ask her about what she thinks the pandemic is doing to the way we parent. And how our kids, when they're our age, will look back at this crazy year in their life. And how will they reflect on the time that we've spent together? Will it be good? Will it be bad? The truth is probably in between, and I hope it's more good than bad. KJ Del Antonio is our guest on Dying to Ask. I'm Deirdre Fitzpatrick, and I've been anchoring morning news for more than 20 years. I know two things. One, that phrase, I'll sleep when I'm dead, is starting to seem likely. And two, the best conversations take time. Dying to Ask is my chance to have longer, more meaningful conversations without a producer yelling rap in my ear. Personal change requires personal growth. And these days, Plan B is the new Plan A. Ready to do life bigger and better despite the Rona? This is Dying to Ask. Well, KJ, welcome to the Dying to Ask podcast.
Thank you for having me.
Oh, I'm absolutely thrilled to. And actually, you really made my day one day last summer because I got into my DMs and Instagram and you had reached out to me and offered me an advanced copy of The Chicken Sisters, which is your new fiction book. And I felt like such an idiot because I responded like 10 seconds later And I had one of those funny moments because I actually was already kind of a fan of yours and knew about your book. And so for you all of a sudden to be kind of sliding into my DMs, I was like, is that happening? It was just kind of weird, but it totally made my day because it was such a spontaneous thing for me.
That is awesome. And it's also like that just says that I was reaching out to the right people, right? Which is nice for me because you were actually interested. And, you know, writers want to find the right readers, right? Nobody writes for everybody.
So it was interesting because when you reached out, you know, you were explaining that you were about to launch this new book, but because of the pandemic, most of your regular avenues for doing something like that weren't really there. And you had these books sitting there and you're hoping to get them out. What an interesting year you've had.
I wouldn't normally be the person with the stack of books. What happened was my book was actually supposed to come out in the summer. And when they shut down my publisher's offices, the warehouses also had to shift gears and suddenly couldn't send out advanced copies in the way that they normally would and wouldn't. So my publisher was like, we've got all these. We're basically like, you know, it was that March panic, right? They were like, how about we just send them to you? So suddenly I had just this huge box that as an author, that's not normally the way it works. Like usually they send them out. And anyway, I had this huge box of copies and I was like, I just want to get these out into the world. That's the best. It'd be so stupid to end up with them sitting here the day before the book publishes. And I did. I think I have two left.
So I guess it worked.
Was so happy to get something in the mail, right?
Oh, absolutely. And my husband laughed when I saw him when I showed him the message and the book, because our quarantine project as a family was raising chickens. So I've been posting pictures on Instagram and in stories all summer long about the chicks as they were growing and now they're laying, you know, all this stuff. And my husband's like, wow, now you're officially the chicken lady. You've officially gone like over the edge with the chicken sisters. So tell us a little bit about the book. I mean, I absolutely loved it. And having worked in the Midwest, for me, it just captured all of these things about that part of the country and kind of the salt of the earth of the people and the grit of the people when they get a goal in mind.
Well, I grew up in Texas and in Kansas, so I get really disappointed by the fact that all the books, a lot of books are set on the coast. I live on a coast now, you know, it's all fine. And I love where I love California, but I just wanted to write something that was set where I grew up, that showed it as the fantastic place that I know that it is. So that was super fun. And what it is the story of two sisters raised in a small town by a mom who's got some issues, and one stays and one goes. And they have sort of an ongoing life battle over who made the right life choices. And at some point they basically decide to figure out who's right through the means of a reality television show competition between two fried chicken restaurants. It gets sort of complex and elaborate because it's a fun plot, right? But one of them works for, there's this small town has two fried chicken restaurants, and one is married to the son of the one, and the mother has always run the other, and they have always been a feuding pair. Mm-hmm. So they're going to compete in this reality TV show, and while they're at it, they're going to compete with each other.
I feel like I can see the movie.
I hope so.
I feel like I see Jennifer Garner and I see Reese Witherspoon.
I can see those things. That's totally, from your lips to Hollywood.
Yeah. Oh, I'm sure that's exactly how it'll go too. Where did the idea for the story come from in terms of like the actual, was there something specific that brought Chicken Sisters in the restaurants?
There are two fried chicken restaurants in the town that both my parents were raised in it's actually a pair of small towns in Kansas, Pittsburgh and Frontenac. And there are two fried chicken restaurants, Chicken Annie's and Chicken Mary's. Anybody from that part of the country, I see your luck.
Oh, no way. They really exist. Yeah.
Well, kind of.
Sort of. I mean, you know, like inspired by.
Yeah. So I mean, that's a hard thing not to get stuck on as a kid, right? Like, why are there two restaurants named basically the same thing that are not you know, they were not at the time related. I mean, they're probably related in some way. I very much resisted learning the real story.
Oh, yeah.
I've heard a little bit more about it since, but so I was just always stuck on, you know, what is that and why? In our family, we only went to one. And that seemed to be the way it was in every family. You only went to Chicken Annie's or you only went to Chicken Mary's. Nobody went to both restaurants. Right. That would be totally wrong. So that's where the setting, I guess, and the background and the history came from. And then the characters definitely, that all, a lot of that stems from my own desire growing up in Kansas, both to leave it and to love it. And that's, I think a lot of people can relate to that. If you grow up in a small town or a small place, you know, you know you've got a lot of great stuff, but on the other hand, man, you just want to get out. Yeah. So I really wanted to explore that dichotomy.
That dynamic. And sometimes it takes a long time to get to that point and to get, well, it usually is called growing up or turning 40, where you get that, you know. You get that wonderful perspective. But I went to high school in Texas and only moved there for Texas. And I couldn't wait to get out. And now I live out in California now. I can't wait to go back. I have the best time when I go back there. But I see it with eyes that actually appreciate it for the beauty that's there in all sorts of different ways.
Yeah. So that's kind of what it's about is, you know, getting to a place where you look back at your home and see what it gave you and what it could, you know, what it can give you now as an adult.
Speaking of things that give you something now, you have a podcast, the #AmWriting podcast, which I've been a big fan of for, probably the last year or so, which is the other reason why when I saw you in my DMs, I'm like, wait a minute, is this the same person? As I started doing the diagramming, and it was. And your whole podcast with your partners on the podcast is about, it's about writing, but it's also about being creative and finding the sources of inspiration when the normal things that kind of get you going aren't there. And to me, the last 9 months have been really daunting for a lot of people who need that creative side, whether it's writing or painting or anything really, because of the sameness of the world that we're living in right now. Mm-hmm. So what are some things that creative people are doing to kind of stay juiced up right now?
I think a lot of us are, well, we're reading more. And a lot of people will say, I don't read in my genre when I'm writing in my genre. That's actually, I'm not like that. I like to read in the genre that I'm writing in. It gives me a sense of possibility. It shows me, sometimes it shows me, you know, what somebody else has done that is amazing and I wish I could do. But I think you can get a lot of permissions from reading what other people have written. I was a journalist before I turned to fiction, and you know, I still have that little voice in my head that's like, oh, well, no, you can't do that because that couldn't really happen. And then you keep reading and you're like, oh. And
reality's very overrated, especially now.
Yes. Well, and if you look at the things that people love, okay. So I know we're all watching a lot of Netflix right now, right? I just watched, we're watching The Queen's Gambit.
Mm-hmm. That's wonderful.
First, if you are a writer sitting around going, well, I can't do that because that's too melodramatic. Watch the first episode of The Queen's Gambit. You want melodrama? That thing's got every cliche in the book. Oh, look, car accident, orphan, drugs, you know, scary orphanage. She ends the scene. I mean, I don't want to spoil it for anybody, but the way that episode ends is the height. I mean, it's practically tying her to railroad tracks while twirling your mustache.
Right.
I loved it. And
I know.
Loves it. So just to take a look more deeply at the media that you are consuming and look at it from the perspective of whatever it is that you create, I think it can be super freeing.
Do you also seek out different types of media just to let your brain travel a little bit? Because one of the things I know, I have a friend who's an interior designer, and she talks about the fact that for her, she feels blocked because she can't travel right now. And for her, she's got to go great places and have amazing meals and get on an airplane and see people across the aisle and make up stories about them. And, you know, she needs the art of travel to get the art of what she does really flowing. Do you find that, like, exposing yourself to those other genres and seeking out information other places can be a substitute?
I do. I wouldn't watch this much TV in normal times. So, you know, I'm getting those stories in. I have turned to having conversations like, I think we all replaced the phone with email a long time ago. I've gone straight back to the phone. So I will set something up with a friend and I will go for a walk by myself and they will go for a walk by themselves, but we are talking. So yeah. It is like we went for a walk together. So that way I'm getting voices in through my mind instead of through my eyes, which is a little bit different. People tell you stories differently and things come out differently. I'm spending a lot of time on Instagram, which is very visual or very something. Sometimes I don't know what it is. I think we're also all sort of trying to, make our own spaces as personal as we can, and working on the things that are around us. So, it's just a different way to get inspiration. And maybe that's a good thing, right? If you always get your inspiration in the same way, to start having to try to look for it in other places, that's not entirely bad.
Yeah.
I think an important element of this is to force yourself to do your work. Because otherwise it'd be easy to sort of just be like, well, I'm not inspired right now and I can't do anything I usually do. So I'm not going to get anything done. I set a timer and force myself to sit down and look at the project and dig deep in my mind to see what's in there. And if you're stuck staring at a blank screen or a page, I often do it with a notebook, mm-hmm. for 30 minutes, 40 minutes, 50 minutes, your brain will come up with something.
Just to fill the time.
Yeah, it's very boring.
What is your creative process?
I'm in another room while you do that though. Every time. I failed, I set the timer and then I literally throw the phone across the room on the rug.
Yeah, whatever it takes. Mm-hmm. What's the creative process like on a podcast where you have multiple co-hosts? I mean, as I join you right now, it's me in a closet. It doesn't get much easier than that. What's it like when you're working with multiple co-hosts on something, especially creative people?
Oh, it's a weekly podcast, so there's plenty of room to satisfy all of our desires to talk about stuff. There are three of us. I like the episodes when it's the three of us talking the best, but we also, more than half of our episodes are interviews. So that'll be two of us plus one other person. And we're just pretty, if any one of us wants to do something or wants to interview someone, we'll go along with it. There's always something interesting. We have found that our most interesting guests are people who, they're not famous writers, people who are really deep in their career, who are working really hard and who are listeners who have something that they want to share with other listeners. Those have been some of our most successful episodes because those are people that sort of know who we are and what we're doing and just want to be a part of it.
It's interesting. I've noticed the same thing. And I've talked to other podcast hosts who have said the same thing. It's not having Beyonce on your podcast. It's having somebody who can teach somebody something that they can do that day, whether mm-hmm. it's a life hack or maybe motivation to try something new or in a different kind of way that makes an instant difference, that builds that viewership or listenership of that episode. It's a great reminder about a lot of the creative projects we do in life.
Yeah, we had David Sedaris on and we were beside ourselves, obviously, thrilled to pieces, excited to get to interview him. But the truth is that he gave the flat out worst advice ever offered to any writer ever under any circumstances. And we called him out on it because he said, well, if you want to write for The New Yorker, you got to wait for them to call. And we're like, no, wait, wait, you mean you have to like work really hard and put yourself in a position? And he's like, no, you just have to wait. I hate it when people ask me for things he was very David Starrs. Yeah. I hate it when people ask me for things. If you ask me to review your book, I'm so not going to. You just have to let me find it. And I was like, well, okay, but that's not good. That's not good advice for developing a career.
That is hilarious.
Only works for David Sedaris.
Yeah. Well, there are a lot of things that can work for David Sedaris.
And that's just sort of true across the board. It does a lot. It's a lot more interesting to hear how somebody who's just, in the process of publishing their debut novel, wrote it and got it published and found an agent and did all that thing than it is to hear Richard Russo say the same thing. He's great and we can learn a lot. We had a great craft episode with him, but in terms of just finding a place in the business, it's not as interesting to talk to people who are established.
Right. You've had great success with a variety of different types of genres now. And your background, as you mentioned, is as a journalist. And you did write parenting articles for many years as well for the New York Times and the Motherload blog. And I'm curious to know how your own personal parenting has changed over the last year. You have four kids, three of whom are teenagers, which is not easy right now. But what have been some of the things that maybe you took as givens before in parenting and that you wrote about that maybe now you're looking at a little bit differently? I'm asking for myself right now.
Well, I don't know how helpful this is, but I used to spend a lot of time worrying about the scheduling and all the things that we did and you know, balancing and not putting too much weight on outside activities and sports and stuff like that. And now we don't really need to have that conversation anymore because it's not really an option. So I think that if I could find the right balance of helping my kids explore, you know, enjoy their outside activities and do their schoolwork and stuff like that, and choosing things to do for themselves, if that makes any sense, that would solve a lot of problems. And really, when all the outside activities disappeared, it didn't solve very much. I mean, there we sort of were still left with each other, and we did miss them. So,
be honest. And I'm just curious to see if you had the same reaction I did. Those first couple of weeks when you didn't have to drive anyone anywhere, did you kind of enjoy it?
Oh, yeah, totally.
I did too.
Yeah, I'm over that now. But
there
yes,
were those so many hours in the day that I didn't know existed.
Exactly. Those first months, and I think we all did. I think there was a sense of palpable relief in our house when things slowed down that dramatically. So, you know, I hope to take from that a lesson about not speeding them up entirely when we can. But now that it's been so long, I also feel like I have more appreciation for what those outside activities were giving all of us than I did before. You know, I used to regard the travel sports trips, for example, I was determined to enjoy them, so I often would, but largely I saw it as a chore. And now I can see, no, that was actually something we were all enjoying. So maybe that's another thing that I hope that I'll take out of this is realizing, oh, you know, I didn't think I liked doing that, but I actually did.
Do you think that the last 9 months, the events of the last 9 months will significantly change parenting in this country?
I would like to tell you that I think that the powers that be will wake up and realize that when there is no childcare, there are no workers, but that does not seem to be happening. That's a source of endless frustration and something that I've been writing about for years, which is if childcare is school, which it often is for many of us, and school's hours don't match the work hours that we're all supposed to keep, that's a huge problem. You know, summer is lovely, but summer is also a massive expense and pain for many working parents. The hours from 3 to 5, same thing. So maybe it'll be slow, but maybe we will come around to it. You know, maybe our legislatures and the people that create the policy will begin to understand that we need more support for families because families are the parents are also, you know, the economy.
Yeah, we've definitely opened up a conversation, whether we wanted that conversation opened or not. We're definitely we're having to do things in very different ways. You know, some of them are good. Some of them are challenging. Some of them are great.
So that's the macro piece. Mm-hmm. And then for us at home, do I think that it will change the way that we actually, I do. I think we're all permanently changed. And I hope that we are all permanently more closely and deeply bonded with the people that we live with now, whoever those people are. I think, you know, 10, 15 years from now, as our kids grow up and grow into adults, they're going to have a very different relationship with each other than they might have because they have spent this time together. And, you know, I hope for that. I think that would be lovely.
Yeah, we were having a conversation at the dinner table the other night about my boys are 15 and 11. And I said, I wonder when you're like our age, if you will look back fondly at this year, or will it be the I went to school uphill both ways, only I didn't actually go to school. You know, will it be their version of that? And probably the truth is somewhere
probably
in the middle.
Both.
Probably
yeah.
Both. I just hope they remember us in a halfway decent way. But I guess time will tell on that as well.
Yeah.
So what happens next with the Chicken Sisters? The book you had mentioned, when you'd reached out over the summer, the book was about to come out. It was delayed. Has that been pretty standard in the book industry?
There have been a lot of delays and a lot of changes. Everything is super unpredictable.
Even for David Sedaris?
Maybe not. Although there have been some really big titles that have been pushed back because, especially among children's books, because those mm-hmm. really depend on in-store sales, whereas adult books can make their way through social media and online stuff, but it's harder for kids' books. So yeah, there have been delays and changes and just everything. It's been very much a roll with it kind of year, but I think it's all going to work out. I'm excited at the way it seems to be playing out for the Chicken Sisters. There's a lot of, I'm really enjoying talking to people about it, and I think it's going to be great.
And the book is officially out
December 1st.
Excellent. And then I just read that it was just named one of the like indie books to watch.
It's the Indie Next list. Yes, bookstores compile it. And it's the, you know, the top books of the month. Their goal is to give their booksellers, it's all recommended and created by booksellers so that those booksellers will have great books to recommend for any reading taste. So if you're wandering into even if you're not wandering into a bookstore, if you're sitting around, hopefully independently shopping at your independent bookstore online, you can scroll your way over to their Indie Next list and you'll find something for every taste. That's kind of the way that it's set up. There'll be a thriller and there'll be a women's fiction, which is me, and there'll be a romance, which is a friend of mine's book, and it's great. And there'll be some nonfiction. There's something for everyone. So it's a great way to do your holiday shopping.
Yeah, absolutely. What is a good way then for people to keep up with you?
You can find me at kjdelantonia.com. And the best place, if you sort of want to interact with the actual real me frantically typing away on my phone, is on Instagram, where I am at KJDA.
Well, I have to ask you, because I'm looking at you in front of a beautiful bookshelf with like a gazillion titles I've been snooping while we've been chatting. I have to ask you,
it's all gorgeous.
Oh, yeah. It's wonderful.
I'm surrounded by nothing but beauty in books.
There is so much beauty in books. But what are you reading? What do you recommend to people these days?
Oh my gosh. If you like Jane Austen, mm-hmm. I just read the most amazing. It's like if Jane Austen had floated down and given us a new book. It's called The Other Bennet Sister. And I think it came out in March. So this would be why no one heard anything about it. Yeah. But it really is as close to like the additional Pride and Prejudice story that you always wanted. And it's about Mary. And I think we all thought we hated Mary, but I don't hate Mary anymore. It's so good. So if you have anybody that loves Jane Austen, that would be like, just wrap that up and give them to them.
That's wonderful. Is it a modern adaptation or is it set back in time?
Modern adaptations. I just read a couple of fun ones of fun modern adaptations. One is actually, I'm looking for the title. Where did you go? There it is. All Stirred Up is a modern adaptation of the, Persuasion story. And then Recipe for Persuasion is another modern adaptation. But no, The Other Bennet Sister is written as though it's this Mary's story. And the first, maybe third of the book is the Pride and Prejudice story. You see it from her eyes. So you get even the lines that she says that which were in the book, you know, so aggravating and proper and prudish. But now you can understand where it is that she's coming from.
Oh, that's so cool.
So good.
Clever.
And then it goes on. Yeah.
That's very clever.
Total, writer envy for the woman who brought that off. It's so good. So I have loved that.
Do you think you'll stick with fiction?
I do. Yeah, you do? I have another book. Mm-hmm. I have a second book that is with my editor right now. And so when I talk about working, sitting down to figure out what my, you know, to work on a creative project, it's the starting to stir up the third.
I love it.
Yeah.
Well, keep setting that timer.
Exactly.
KJ, thank you for joining us today. And thank you for reaching out that day over the summer. It made my afternoon. And I wish you all the best. And I hope people will check out your podcast, #MWriting.
Thank you. This was great. I really appreciated it and enjoyed it. Great to talk to you.
Oh, thank you. All right. I don't know about you, but I'm going out and getting a timer. I love how simple that advice is. And I think it has to be a real timer with like the little clicky thing that goes as you turn it to the right and then that ding that goes off at the very end. And think about that being your time to create, your time to sit, your time to not be distracted by anything else. Let your brain rest and just see where it goes. Now, maybe you're not writing a book like KJ is, but maybe it's just time to sit and work on that online photo book that you've been putting off and putting off. I know I've got a couple of those projects. Give yourself the time to do something that feeds your brain, because sometimes when you feed your brain, you feel to feed the soul. When you feed the soul, crazy things can happen. Crazy good things. You can reach out to me on Instagram as KJ did at RunReadSip. Send me a direct message. I read them. And I would love to interact with you there. Find out if you have some ideas for guests or questions. Let me know. And you can always recommend the podcast to your friends by sharing a screen grab of it on social media. I would love to know what you thought of this episode, what you got out of listening to KJ Dell'Antonia. And we appreciate everybody who has been leaving us ratings and reviews as well. It's fun having season 6 of the podcast back and going again. And I'm looking forward to the guests we have coming up in the next couple of weeks. Thanks for listening to Dying to Ask, and we'll see you again next time.